You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Today's text is from the compact and intense book of Amos. Because the circumstances of its having been written so clearly parallel our own society, and it's hard to spiritualize away its blunt, prophetic words into fluffy, feel-good platitudes, Amos is not a book on which you often hear sermons. Just like today, the folks at the top of society back then are experiencing extraordinary economic prosperity, much of which has been made possible by official policies and cultural norms that have disenfranchised the poor and systematically destroyed the equivalent of the middle class. So, speaking the words of the Lord, Amos lets the people know that God is totally fed up with them. They're living in a bubble of extravagance, numbness, and denial. Worse, they keep doing the same old, over and over again, thinking it's going to please God. But to God, it's just so much noise.
Our words of wisdom are from Amos, chapter 5, verses 21 through 24. I despise your festivals, and I take no delight in your solemn assemblies. Even though you offer me your burnt offerings and grain offerings, I will not accept them, and the offerings of well-being of your fatted animals I will not look upon.
Take away from me the noise of your songs. I will not listen to the melody of your harps, but let justice roll down like waters, and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
It was a beautiful Sunday morning, and Jimmy came stumbling into Sunday school late. Aware that he was usually very prompt, his teacher asked, "Is everything okay, Jimmy?"
"No, ma'am, not really," he admitted. "I was going to go fishing, but my daddy told me that I needed to get on up and go to church." Impressed, the teacher asked Jimmy if his father had explained to him why it was more important to go to church than to go fishing. "Yes, ma'am, he did," Jimmy said. "My daddy said he didn't have enough bait for the both of us." You know, it's not just Jimmy's dad. Lots of people are choosing to do what only a few generations ago would have been unthinkable in proper society. Not go to church. Particularly out here in the West, especially in the Pacific Northwest, the most common answer on religious affiliation polls is no preference. It's what's been dubbed the rise of the nuns or the duns. People are just done with what has passed for religion in North America, and Europe and Australia, New Zealand are way ahead of us in this regard. Why? Lots of reasons, and not the least of which is a sense of hypocrisy and irrelevance. People look at their neighbors who claim to be religious, hating and excluding other people, denying science and rational thought, and exhibiting an overall holier-than-thou attitude, and they say, "Forget it. The church is no different than any other institution." And they'd be right. Add to that the way many churches have doubled down on their outdated and harmful positions on social norms, and it's no wonder people have determined that religion is not just irrelevant, it's dangerous. And they're not the first to think it. I've talked about the German pastor and theologian Dietrich Bonhoeffer before. From the rise of Adolf Hitler to the end of the war, Bonhoeffer worked to oppose the state-controlled church, the murderous Nazi regime, and everything so many of his fellow Germans seemed to blithely go along with. Unlike the vast majority of his pastor colleagues, Bonhoeffer believed that true discipleship demanded political resistance against a criminal state. His early efforts included starting an underground seminary and organizing others to stand up against the contamination of the church with anti-Semitism, hate, and political idolatry. He eventually joined the resistance movement and, despite being a committed pacifist, worked to help organize an attempt to assassinate Hitler. In March of 1943, the Gestapo arrested and imprisoned him. While he was in prison, he wrote the letters and essays which have continued to inspire generations of frustrated Christians ever since. On April 30th, 1944, he wrote describing his thoughts about the state of Christianity. "You would be surprised and perhaps even worried by my theological thoughts and the conclusions that they lead to. What is bothering me incessantly is the question, what Christianity really is for us today. In light of the depravity of the Nazi state and the horrific violence of the war, what did Christianity mean anymore? With German Christians so captive to their culture, not protesting the persecution of the Jews and unwilling to stand up against evil and unjust laws, what does religion even mean anymore? Has it become fundamentally irrelevant? German Christianity had become all about the personal and private experience and isolated itself from what was going on in society and politics. In fact, many religious institutions prided themselves in having willingly transformed themselves into servants of the state. An otherwise religious person could confess doctrinally correct beliefs, observe the church's moral codes, and follow the accepted behaviors and practices of the church while simultaneously committing unspeakable horrors. I can imagine Bonhoeffer condemning the church with the words that we heard from Amos. I despise your festivals, and I take no delight in your solemn assemblies. Even though you offer me your burnt offerings and grain offerings, I will not accept them. And the offerings of well-being of your fatted animals, I will not look upon. Take away from me the noise of your songs. I will not listen to the melody of your harps." So Bonhoeffer wondered, what would Christianity look like if it was stripped of all the regalia and ornaments? What would remain if the typical trappings of religion, clergy, rites, holy things, beliefs, and morality were eliminated? What would religionless Christianity look like? He came to the conclusion that it would be just two things, prayer and righteous action. That's it. The Gospels describe Jesus doing just these two things continually. He'd withdraw to the wilderness or to a quiet, lonely place to meditate and pray alone. Then he'd jump back into the life of the world with healing actions and a bold prophetic voice. Prayer and righteous action were the key features of Jesus' life. And I hate to break it to you, but Jesus did not intend to found a new religion. Christianity as we know it was not Jesus' objective. As Kurt Struckmeyer writes, "Jesus' life, teachings, and actions were focused on creating a new kind of personal and community life in the midst of the old. He set out to transform human life in the midst of a great empire and to challenge those forces that oppress and divide people in every society. This is the journey Jesus invites us to join. This is where Jesus is leading us." But that ancient message and example of Jesus has become muted and distorted, both in our churches and in the public arena. His words and actions don't shock us anymore. The church has domesticated Jesus into a harmless and irrelevant figure. To paraphrase Bishop Yvette Flunder in Living the Questions, I see Jesus walking around as a horribly oppressed person with a whole lot of clothes on, pressing down on him with layers and layers of things that we've taken 2,000 years to lay on him. There's political stuff, there's economic stuff, there's church stuff. Jesus is a plank on many political platforms. Jesus is the reason that we go to war. Jesus is the reason we oppress the immigrant. Jesus is even mad at Mickey Mouse or the Teletubbies. But there comes a point when we have to undress Jesus. We have to take all the crap that we've put on Jesus, all of these layers and layers of tradition and all of our different ideas and theologies, and get back to the Jesus that stood in the water with John the Baptist. In both Bonhoeffer's and our day, traditional Christianity has proven to be morally bankrupt, easily dismissing the violence, oppression, and racism institutionalized by our culture as secular problems, while obsessing about the spiritualized minutiae of the personal and private religious practices of individuals. And it's not just the harassment, persecution, and lynchings of African Americans that was a norm for white Christians in the Jim Crow South, or the systematic and well-funded campaigns that on religious grounds continue today to try to exclude LGBTQ people from full citizenship. It's the dangerous fixation many conservative evangelicals have, like the German people of the 1930s, who believe that our country is God's chosen nation, destined for exceptional greatness through no effort of our own. And socialists, gays, Jews, and liberals are an impediment to that greatness and must be eliminated. We might well ask, along with Bonhoeffer, how it is possible that the practice of Christianity can become so divorced from the task Jesus set before us, that of loving our neighbors. How is it that religious practice can leave people not only unchanged at their core, but reinforce their prejudices and fears? Because religion has a tendency to become toxic. In our case, Christians have lost touch with the fact that Jesus didn't call people to be religious, but to be loving. Jesus didn't call people to be right, but to be loving. Jesus didn't call people to join a club, but to follow him, to join him in seeking justice, healing the world, and loving one's neighbors. What Kurt is saying, what Yvette is saying, what Dietrich was saying, is that we have gone so far off the rails, it might be necessary to just start all over. We need to get back to the gospel of Jesus and stop being distracted by the gospel about Jesus. We have to let go of our preconceived ideas about Christianity. We have to let go of our religious dogma. And we have to let go of the institutional church's conventional wisdom. We have to reclaim the Jesus of history, the human Jesus, and begin at the very beginning in creating a Christianity stripped of its religious garments and limited to two things, contemplative prayer and righteous action in the world. This religionless Christianity would transform the idea of being a Christian from affirming some belief system to pursuing a spiritual practice that seeks to imitate Jesus, to love your neighbor as yourself. It consists of a life of caring for people and responding in concrete ways to heal wounds and alleviate the causes of suffering for real people in the real world. Granted, that has been a part of the church's mission over the centuries, but the institution often seems to forget that this is its core mission, not just a peripheral activity. Bonhoeffer wrote, "It will be a new language, perhaps quite non-religious, but liberating and redeeming, as was Jesus' language. It will shock people and yet overcome them by its power. It will be the language of a new righteousness and truth, proclaiming God's peace with humanity and the coming of God's kingdom. Non-religious, liberating, redeeming, shocking. I think Dietrich was onto something. He was himself stripped of everything until there was nothing left except doing what Jesus asks us all to do. Follow me. That's it. Jesus said, walk with me toward the vision I am proclaiming, the revolutionary reign of God, this conspiracy of love. So what are we to do? Give up your good Christian life and follow Jesus. What did God say through Amos? Forget all your festivals and solemn assemblies, burnt offerings and grain offerings. Cut it out. Take away the noise of your songs and your harps. You know what God wants? Let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. That's what God wants. And that's what the world needs. As Methodist minister Colin Morris wrote in the 1960s, Christianity is humane action for Jesus' sake at cost to myself. That and nothing much else of any significance. That's it. But to an outsider taking stock of how we actually behave, our actions ring about as hollow as the sales pitch of a bald-headed man selling hair restorer. So, the church has a lot of hair restorer to offload. Jimmy's dad knows it, and so do a lot of other folks who have long since given up on the hypocrisy and irrelevance of religion and just gone fishing. What about you? Are you ready to just go fishing? Or are you convinced enough by Jesus' call to be a part of salvaging his message and being a part of his conspiracy of love? On April 9th, 1945, only a few days before the end of the war in Europe, Dietrich Bonhoeffer was hanged at a Nazi concentration camp at Flossenbürg. He was 39 years old. I seriously doubt that any of us are in danger of being hanged for our beliefs. But if you join me in suggesting that people give up their good Christian life to actually follow Jesus, I guarantee you're going to upset more than a few true believers. Rest assured, whatever the cost, the words of Reverend Morris continue to ring true. When our churches have crumbled and our vestments have rotted, and the wind blows through the ruins of our ecclesiastical structures, all that will stand and have eternal significance are creative acts of compassion. So, give up that good Christian life and follow Jesus. All you've got to lose is some really bad religion. Be well.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.wepuTLoveFirst.org.